That's Made in France. That's the name of the song. It's from Live in Germany, Joshua Stefan, Richard Smith. Joshua's father is playing there too, and Richard Smith and Joshua's father are the two other guitarists, and there's a bass player and a violin player. Well, that's another great track from that live performance in Germany in 2018. According to the beginning of that video. And as you probably noticed, it was on YouTube. I have to have make a kind of very strange announcement today about Novum. The band called Novum, and some of you obviously probably, almost certainly know this. Some of you do know this. Novum is not a real band. It's a fictional band. But the backstory was quite detailed of this fictional band. And they were in a movie. And that's they wrote songs for a movie. Somebody did. And the movie was, quite a bit of the movie was, it consisted of recording these songs in the movie. You know, that was, but they did it in 2006, I believe, because it was a 2006 release, the movie called Novum. But it looked like it was footage shot in 1973, which is what the backstory was giving. Right, the backstory of the band was that they died in 1973. All of them. And I couldn't find any single one of them except Tim Akers, I guess, is the guy who was Austin in the movie, who was singing the song about Eyes of a Child and other songs too, but or at least one other, at least. Peace of Mind is the other one that I can think of. But there's another actor I could not find who was called Brad Crittenden. Couldn't find a picture of him. I could find him, I just couldn't find a picture of him. So I couldn't identify him from the movie. And the only person I could really be sure of who's real, who's still alive, because there are there's at least four people called Tim Akers. I mean, you can't find for sure what's going on with his name. He's the actor who played Austin in the movie, evidently. I mean, that's... I can barely believe it myself, because it was so realistic that I was convinced it was a real story. Anyway, the other part is that Dan is the engineer who helped them record their songs in the movie. He's an amazing, talented guitar player. I mean, unless that was all dubbed, right? Which it could have been. But I didn't think that... I mean, none of it seemed dubbed to me. But I wasn't looking for dubbing, you know, but none of it seemed dubbed. Of course it was dubbed. Yeah, no, I shouldn't say... I know it was dubbed because... Okay, yeah. Now, yeah. I don't mean that. What? I can't explain what I'm trying to say here. In the movie, it was a collage, right? Okay, they had a lot of footage. What I understood was that they took a lot of different footage to make the movie, and it was, they had many takes of each song. So that's why it looked like it was dubbed, but it wasn't. It wasn't. It obviously wasn't dubbed. I mean, but maybe it, of course it was. But I mean, but maybe it wasn't. You know, we don't know. But the thing is, it had to look like it was dubbed because they didn't have video footage for the actual take that they used on the final recording. If you see what I mean. It was dubbed in that sense. That wasn't. That's not dubbing. That's just sort of video matching or something, or video editing. That's what it was, edited. It was edited. That's what it was, right? Okay, not dubbed, but edited. We knew it was edited. You could tell that he wasn't singing exactly in sync in the song "Eyes of a Child," for example. But anyway, I mean the whole thing. I did research years ago to try and find out, are they real or not? And even then, I think even back then, somebody was saying they were fictional, and I didn't believe it because I couldn't find any evidence of the proof that there were any actors or anything. But there's a woman called, okay, what's her name? Let's find out. Well, let's do it right. Hopefully we can do it on screen there. Let's see. Yeah, there it is. This girl. Okay. There is a girl, an actress in the movie. Sherry Cothran. And if you look at her, that's her website. She is now a minister of the Bible. A reverend, or whatever she calls herself, which is... It's not something that ministers of the Bible are supposed to call themselves. We're not supposed to call ourselves reverend, but that's what she calls herself. But she's a minister, right? So that's the point. And that's her, and she's in the movie. And you could probably recognize her from the movie. And she's a singer. She was a singer before she became, but even this doesn't prove it, because she, you know, this by itself wouldn't prove it, because she could have been a singer. She was a singer. She really was a singer in the music business, and then she became a minister of the gospel and of the Bible. But I mean, that wouldn't, the reason that doesn't prove it is because she could have been with the band Novum, and maybe she didn't die in the crash with the others, and so on. You could reason it, you know, that it's possible that this doesn't prove that it's a fictional band. But it looks like there's enough evidence to say that it was a movie, and that these characters, if you look up Brad Crittenden, the picture for him that is given is a picture from the movie. So, I mean, it's that proves, you know, that there's at least three different actors that I can find evidence for now, including Tim Akers, that show that it's not a real movie. It's a real movie. It's not a real... I mean, I'm so confused. It's not a real movie. Listen to me. It's a fake movie. Yeah. The movie never happened. It's like, yeah, I don't understand how they could completely... Because they had a backstory where the band... In the backstory, they gave dates and places for everything that happened to the fictional band. There were dates. Nobody gives dates, time and place exactly for fictional events. That's how you know they're real. But that's what they did with this band. So it was... I'm still not going to be able to believe it for at least a few months or something. I don't know. It's crazy. But... Every song on that means every song in the movie was written for the movie. But they're so... Well, it makes more sense, too, because the songs are so well written that how could these young students write these great songs, right? It makes more sense that it's fictional, but it just doesn't make any sense. If you know what I mean, it doesn't make any sense that they would do all that just for a fictional movie about these... I mean, it's a great movie, these young people who die... All of them die in a van, in a car crash, on their way home. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, it's one of those things you have to be aware of in the world, right? There's a lot of deception going on in the world. Today we're going to skip Psalms because we're doing, tomorrow's the first of a new month. So we'll be doing the month, the first day of the month in coincidence with the 31. So we're going to skip 31 for today, and we're going to do Isaiah 11, are we? No, we're not. No, you know what? We're going to skip that, too, because we have to wait for... We're going to skip all of our Bible today. We're going to have a day off. That's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do. You know, unless we read something completely unrelated in the Bible, which we could do, but I think we'll have a day off today. If you want to, you can read Isaiah 11 while I'm talking, but I'm sure I have a few things to share. Yes, I do. I do. I know I have a lot of things to share with all of my little children. Look at this. Watch. I can't get it. There it is. How do I get it on screen? There we go. To turn it over. That's my 17 jewel wind up chronograph made by Waltham. 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 And I'm sure, in my mind, but I could be wrong. I'm sure that I bought this watch. I don't know what year it was, but somewhere, I'm sure it was somewhere near. No, I'm not even sure. I'm pretty sure it was fairly near 1973. But I know, I'm positive in my mind it was $65. Like, that I'm certain of in my mind, which also could be wrong, but it was $65 because there were like $55, $65. I ended up, there was probably one for $75, or there were more expensive ones in some catalog. What catalog I bought it from, I don't remember. Whether that would be in a Sears catalog. I don't remember if it was or not, or if it could have been. I think it was a more specialty catalog for a more unusual type of a catalog. And maybe my mother got this, the catalog for me. Maybe my mother bought this for me, or maybe I bought it from the money I had saved up. I don't know if I had any money in those days. We had an allowance, but back in those days, I don't know if we received... I mean, I remember when my allowance was probably only 50 cents. What was that, a week or per month? I can't remember. My allowance was... I don't remember my allowance ever being more than 50 cents. I mean, I just don't remember it being more than 50 cents, but it may have been at some point. I don't remember that. I'm not even sure of the 50 cents. I'm going to put this gum away. Anyway. I bought it. But think about that. This watch is 49 years old. We're very close to it, 49 years old. It still runs fine. But I didn't wear it for a lot of years. It's very heavy. Very heavy. Didn't wear it for a long time. The buttons for the stop and start and the reset for the stopwatch are broken off. They just dropped off, fell off over here. Both the buttons on the exterior part of the buttons fell off. But the central stem, the main stem, I forget what that's called. Watch the YouTube video channel, Wristwatch Revival, which is hard to say, by the way. But watch Wristwatch Revival if you want to learn about the names of all the parts of a watch, because he talks about those. But he only talks about mechanical watches, I believe. It's all about mechanical watches. Wristwatch Revival. It's a great channel to learn how to. Well, you don't really learn how to do it, but you could. The thing is, it teaches you how to learn a lot of things if you watch somebody repair a watch, because he talks all the way through it too. In most of everything he does, he talks his way through it. He doesn't skip over a lot of. There's a lot of editing as well, where he leaves certain parts out, but he explains how he does everything, so it's very instructive. And watch repair is a lot like a lot of other things to do with, you know, engineering or what am I saying? Using tools, how to use tools, you know, that sort of thing. Being a handyman, maybe, you know, things like, but it's more of being an engineer and being very exact with how you do things. To watch someone repair a watch is instructive. It's good. It shows that in watch repair and cleaning and all of that, you have to be very systematic. It's very useful to be doing things one step at a time and always following a very careful method or a very careful having a careful attitude towards doing things in a specific way. My grinder, I bought three grinding wheels with it, three that were made by a different company, DeWalt. When you buy the wheel, if it's going to be threaded on, you have to get the right thread. So I had to buy the 5/8. But I didn't know that they were threaded. They just happened to be the right ones. Because when Amazon says, this item is often bought with this item, that sometimes means it's the correct item to buy with it. So I bought those grinding wheels just thinking, well, they've got to be. I can't remember what I did. I even check the thread? I don't think I checked the thread, but they just happened to be the right thread. So I can thread the wheel right onto the grinder. Now, if you can't thread it on, that's okay. You can buy these grinding wheels that just. And one of them, I bought three of these grinding wheels, okay? They're only $6 each, you know, so why not? If you buy a grinder for $60, and it was. I couldn't resist the grinder. It's an angle grinder. But I couldn't resist the grinder because it was only $60. And these things can cost $400. And they weigh like about 10 pounds, some of them. This one was only 4 pounds or under 4 pounds, actually. It's one of the lightest ones ever made. It's in Germany. This company, Bosch, the place that makes it, is phenomenal as a company. And I own one of their products, the Jigsaw, as I mentioned before, earlier in the video, the unboxing video. I own a Bosch jigsaw, so I know that Bosch makes good. Well, I knew they made excellent equipment when I bought the jigsaw. That's why I bought it. But I mean, I bought DeWalt. I have two of their drills. So when I bought the DeWalt grinding pad to go with the Bosch grinder, I knew DeWalt was okay also as a company, right? But anyway, I bought them. I mean, okay, what? When you're trying to decide what things to buy, online, it's great that we have so many choices, but how do you choose which ones to buy, right? Well, one good thing is it's always good to buy a name brand, right? Always good to buy a name brand if you can get a good price. It's always great to buy name brands if they're good, I won't say even if they're not great companies, because it's always better to buy from a great company. It always is. But it's always better. That's why it's good to be brand loyal, because you know the company already. You know what standards they had in the past. You know what they're like. you know what to expect, right? It eliminates one of the variables that you have to worry about is what is this company? Are they any good? Otherwise, you have to go and read reviews about the product or the company, and that's good to do too, but it's good to not be dependent on a review to decide whether you like or whether you can risk your money on something. It's good. I mean, you can't depend on a review to decide that anyway, okay? But if the review is your only source of information, that's what I'm talking about. It's better not to have the review be your only source of information. It's better to have the experience with that company where you say, I know what that company did in the past. I owned one of their pieces of equipment and I know what it was like. I know what ownership was like with that company. That's a huge thing. That's why brand loyalty, okay? That's the only real reason for brand loyalty anyway. I mean, what other reason? You know, if it's a free marketplace, what's the other reason, right? We're not being loyal. It's not blind. We're not interested in blind loyalty. It's not a technical thing, loyalty. It's something based on, it's a realistic, practical thing. Loyalty for a practical reason. That's what brand loyalty is. I think I didn't make that clear before, but I also probably didn't understand it. Or I didn't need to understand it at the time I was making the point about brand loyalty, but no, it saves you time. That's what brand loyalty is about. It saves you time. Okay? So always try to remember, have I ever owned, is if you're buying shoes, try to remember, what are all the companies from whom I've bought shoes in the past? Like, try to remember. Okay? Because that will give you a huge time savings if you do decide to go with that company, with one of those companies again. You don't have to either. You can go with a brand new company. I went with Danner. I want to talk with the Danner. I bought the Merrells, which are my brand loyal choice, and they fit me really well now that I've got the little triad inserts, the three-quarter insert, the orthotic in there and the heels. They already fit me close to perfect. They would have been a little slippier on my feet, slippier is not a word, I don't think. Slipperier is a word, because slippery is a word. But anyway, well, we can make up words also, I suppose, but it's fun to make up words. I love Shirklank, by the way, but anyway, slipperier on my feet if I hadn't put these inserts in. Right, and now I put the inserts in, and they're just a little snugger, and they're not jammed against my feet are not jammed in there too tight. It's, you know, they're not crowded. It's especially because it's only in the heel. This insert only went in the heel part and the arch. It didn't go in the toes. But those shoes are going to be phenomenal. I mean they're already close to phenomenal fit. Like, and I haven't even worn them or broken them in. This is the first time I wore them was yesterday, raking the leaves, and I got them wet because I yanked on the tarpaulin and the puddle of water that I was trying to get out of there splashed on my shoe. So that ended up getting my Merrells wet for the first time on one of the shoes, on the toe of the shoe. So I'll see how that dries out or whatever. But they're not waterproof. They're not Gore-Tex. Neither pairs of boots that I bought were Gore-Tex, nor were they waterproof in any way. Gore-Tex is a breathable waterproofing lining, which I don't like for one reason, because I bought a North Face jacket that was $300 and the Gore-Tex lining is falling out of it. Now, many years later, it's coming up flaking off and it's a mess. So Gore-Tex is not something I'm fond of, but that would not happen in the boots because the Gore-Tex is sealed up, but I don't. That's another reason not to like Gore-Tex, is I don't know whether the Gore-Tex is flaking off inside, or they're not going to, it's probably not forever, is what I think about Gore-Tex. But also, Gore-Tex are too hot. They don't breathe as much as they should, not compared to an open, breathable fabric. So they're far hotter. Now, if you're, I suppose if you want if you're using them in winter, if they're winter boots, but they're not winter boots, but if you're using them in winter, then Gore-Tex might be a good idea because it's warmer and it's waterproof and so on. It's just, I mean, it's no doubt it's a good idea for somebody, not for me. So my Danner boots, I want to talk about those. Now, my Merrells, like I said, I've worn them once now and I love them. I mean, I'm close to being in love with those shoes. Those are Moab 3s. Those are world-renowned hiking shoes or boots. They're boots. They're not a high... they're not a low-cut shoe. They're not a high boot, but they're a boot. They come up over my ankle. Now, I love them, right? They're going to be great. But they're only, you know, good for what they're meant for. I mean, that's what all boots or shoes or products are, right? They're all of them are good for what they're meant for. So a big part of how to know what to choose is knowing what you're going to do with it, right? That's the biggest thing of all in knowing what to choose or how to choose is what are you going to do with it? So, I mean, when I bought the Danners, how did I choose Danner as a company? That's a good question because I don't know how. But, I mean, obviously, ultimately, it helps. I think there is a component that is personal preference. There's no doubt about it. There's a component there, but your personal preference does not decide anything. It can't. It can't decide the answer. But it's always better if you have a kind of a love for the name of something, like Danner. If you love the name Danner for some reason, or if you love the name Merrell, if the name just feels good to you, if it has good connotations in your mind, if it brings up good thoughts to hear the name, then that's one you want to buy, you know, because you like the name. But that doesn't mean you can buy it if it doesn't fit you practically. So, right? I mean, if you can't find one of their products, you might love a name, but that doesn't mean you go and say, "I love that name. I'm going to go and try and find a product." I've done this, I'm sure, many times. I've said, "I want to own something called that. Let's go and find a product that I can buy that they make, that I want, that I need. Let's find a product that, yeah. Let's say that we always did this. What if we always said, "I want to buy a product made by, you know, maybe Sony. I don't think I own anything by Sony right now, but I probably do because I probably own some media. Yeah, I own cassettes by Sony. Yes, I do. Somewhere along the line, I bought them to make one of my records, you know, on cassette. I'm pretty sure I know. I'm almost certain I know that I own some Sony cassettes. But anyway, I don't think I own any equipment made by Sony. But let's say I wanted to own something called Sony. I could say, well, let's see, is there something Sony makes that I would need and have to have it and I want it and I need it right now, and let's go and try and find something Sony makes that I need. If that's your approach, if I did that, I mean, that's ridiculous because isn't it? Can you see why that doesn't work? Because Sony makes so many things. How would I pick? How would I choose? So really, isn't it true that the only way that we choose things, the only way that we're possibly able to choose something is by having a definite purpose, a need. The need has to be filled. So the choice is based on filling the need. That's the basis for choosing. We're trying to fill a need. That's it. So we have to define what the need is. Now, the reason I wanted the angle grinder was because I'm going to start welding and working with steel. Maybe not a lot, but a little more than I have in the past, and maybe more than I am aware right now. But I'm going to work with steel where I couldn't work with steel before because I didn't have a welding machine, which I do now because of the just incredible, amazing, immense number of inexpensive welding machines that are now being produced because of the technology, right? It's semiconductor technology that brought this about. And China, those two things together. China has advanced in their ability. They've always had cheap labor, but they've advanced in their ability to do high tech, right? That's really the reason why these things are coming, and there's more coming. There's a lot more coming in China from China. There's a lot more coming. That's what we need to be aware of, okay? That's right. That's very true. Yeah, it makes me think of my... I've got an SRS error in my car now. Safety restraint system light that comes on after I've driven once and then disconnected the battery, reconnected, restarted. There's an SRS warning. I could find out what that is because I bought a little scanner on Amazon for about $30 or $40. Very inexpensive. I think that one was... It was either that one or my battery measuring device, which checks my car battery, was $30. The other one was $40, whatever. So they're both around that price. But the scanner, you plug it into your car. If it's a new enough car, it has a scanner plug. You plug in the scanner, and it'll tell you what the error is. You don't have to go to a mechanic shop. You know, I mean, what do you call those shops? What do we call a workshop for cars? I forget. The garage. That's what we call them, yeah. We call it a garage. I don't have to go to a garage. We also call the place where we park our car at home a garage, but this is a garage where you get work done. I don't have to go to a garage to have them read the codes and then maybe charge me a lot of money to fix it. I could just read the scan myself and decide whether I want to fix it. So, you know, I can research afterward too. After I read the scan, I can do research on Google. So I can do a lot of the things that they used to do at these garages before we had scanners. Right now I can do it with a scanner without going to the garage. So that's the advantage of, that's a practical use for having a scanner, right? And it cost me of the order of $30. Phenomenal thing. They're not that easy to use, and they're probably different. They're all different, too. You have to go press buttons. You know, it's one of those things. If you're good with digital watches, you'll be good with the scanner, okay? Otherwise, you might not be able to figure out how to use it even. If you're no good with digital watches at all, with all the buttons, you know, changing all the settings on a digital watch, if you can't do that, then you're probably not the person to get a scanner. I mean... Yeah, you have to figure out. I'm going to get the heat on. You have to figure out whether you need it is one thing, but you have to also figure out, is it the right? That's another part of this, how do you choose? Right? How do you choose? Is it right for you? I mean, is it, what is it? Is it your kind of thing? That's what I mean. Is it your type of thing, the type of thing that you would normally buy? Is it the type of thing you would love normally, like to own? Is it up your alley, as we say? That's what we used to say, up your alley. If it's up your alley, then that would mean it's your thing, kind of. It's your kind of thing. It's the kind of thing you love, you know? The kind of thing you love, it's up your alley. That's another big thing, a big aspect, a huge aspect of how do you know what to choose, right? Or how do you choose? It has to be something that you're going to love. And especially if it's mail order, you don't want to have to send stuff back ever. So you need to know before you order it, if it's mail order, that it's got a very high probability. So the other thing that gives it a high probability of being something you're going to like is you got to use the ratings. Use the ratings. Like read the ratings, read the reviews, but look at the ratings for the product and try and buy something that has hundreds of or thousands of ratings, if possible. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you buy something that has one rating. One person said it was 5 stars and that's all you have sometimes, and you know you want it or you believe it's a good product for some reason you could, and it's not expensive, maybe you can buy it. Because that's the fourth thing. You need to know that you're not losing a lot if it turns out it's not going to pan out for you. So don't spend a lot. Try to buy the cheapest thing you can if you're not, especially if you're not sure. Always the cheapest. Always the cheapest, though. Even when you are sure that it's a good product, it's better to save money, right? It's always better to buy the cheapest one. And that means you have to shop to find the cheapest one. So it's a good thing to have that mentality about the cheapest, because it forces you to look at a lot of different manufacturers, a lot of different products, and a lot of different prices from the same manufacturer that are just being sold cheaper. But the same product, same manufacturer, sometimes is sold for $500 and $100 on the same website on Amazon. There are people who charge $500 for the exact same product. Those orthotics, I think, is an example, the Triads. They have a huge price range. I bought them for $17, and they came with two pairs. Two pairs for $17. That's like $9 each, right? For a pair. Because they came as two pairs. They came as two pairs. Two pairs. In other words, two sets of shoes you can fill with these orthotics. But so, I mean, that was a great deal because I know... But they're not super great orthotics or anything. They're just a spacer to put in your shoe. But there are plenty of times when you're going to need a little bit of a spacer to put in the heel of your shoe, just to give your shoe a little better fit, to make your heel slip less. There's plenty of times you're going to need that sort of thing. And I'm not saying you should buy Triads. I'm just saying you're going to want something like that. You don't always want to fill the toe. Sometimes you don't always want a full insole that fills everything. Sometimes you want those as well. So you need some of those. If you're not going to go to a shoe store every time and buy it in person, then I think you need. Even if you go to a store and buy them in person, you still need these orthotics, I believe. Or they're useful, whether you need them or not. They're useful. They can improve the quality of your life. And that's where I want to come to Danner and talk about Danner. Because they're not the most expensive boot. And I'm not impressed by the inside of the boot on the bottom. But this is true of every boot. Almost every boot you buy. Rarely are they going to fit the bottom of your foot. That's the thing. And the Danners didn't suit the bottom of my foot, because I don't have flat feet. I have high arches, so that's why you need to put in some kind of insoles that allow your arch to get the support, right? And then your heel and your ball, the ball of your foot, will press down and depress over time. It will depress, that insert that you put in will be conformed more to your foot, and your arch will gradually gain support. If you have an arch, right, from the material that's not being compressed by your heel and your ball, that material will fill in the arch. But, you know, so a nice squishy material like rubber or foam or something can be a good insert, but it might wear out over time if it's not the best quality. But you could, you know, that's only one approach. The other approach is buy an orthotic insert that has the shape of your arch already. That's the best approach. That's the best approach. And that's how you make a boot feel like it's fantastic on your foot. It feels amazing on your foot when the bottom of your foot feels like it's being fully supported everywhere, evenly, and it just feels like it was like a glove. It's made to fit you. So that's why I've got $110 worth of orthotic inserts in my Danner boots, which is crazy because they only cost $310 for the boots, $110 for the inserts. I mean, I can't. That boggles my mind. And I didn't intend to spend that. I just bought those inserts just to try them. And now I find I want them in there. I want them in there because they make the boot feel a lot better. But I'm going to get another insert. Maybe I'll try some more cheaper ones and see if I can substitute one cheaper one underneath the expensive one or something and save some money in case I want to use the expensive one in some other shoe. But the inserts that were expensive were from Superfeet. And I resisted buying those for quite a long time. I mean, I've been looking into those ever since I bought my My Asics running shoes. See, I've got three pairs of shoes now that are fairly brand new. Running shoes, hiking boots, and work boots. And I got my two pairs of sandals that are still pretty new. And they're excellent quality sandals. Plus I have my old sandals still. And my old shoes. I got my old boots. I got my winter boots. I'm just about complete. I think I am fully equipped for shoes and boots. But the thing is, I paid $120 for, or $119, whatever it was. Like, $119 sounds better than $120. $119 for my Merrells, which is a deal. Like, it's a steal. Because as soon as I checked, just yesterday, I checked the price of those same Merrells. They're now $147, and that's the price they should be. For the same size I bought, they're $147. I should have paid more like $147. I paid $119 because they were just on sale or something at that time. So how you choose is also closely related to how you buy. Because how you buy is by price comparison shopping across the board. Right? And then there's going to be those days when you're not going to be able to resist the temptation to buy something because you know that it's a good price. You know you need it. But you'll get better at knowing when to resist and when not to resist those deals. You're going to be compelled to make the decision to buy that because you know you need it. You know it's a good price. You know it's everything about it is right, like the size. If it's a shoe, it has to be the right size. But you have to do your research. With shoes, it's much, much, much harder than other things. But with shoes, you have to know that the width is right. You have to know it has the right arch for your foot, or it should have all those things. If it doesn't, then you're going to have to put in an orthotic for the arch, probably. And also, you're going to have to, if it's too wide, you might not be able to wear it at all. You might not be able to have it work at all on your foot. And if it's too narrow, obviously that's no good either. So you have to know all those. I've never had a problem with anything ever being too narrow, because that's just the way my feet are. But if you have wide feet, then you've got different problems from what I have. People with wide feet don't have the problems that I have with shopping for shoes. At all. They can just buy almost anything because everything is wide generally. But like I said, price comparison shopping, and then keep an eye on it. If you're in the market to buy it, but you're not convinced that it's a good deal, all of a sudden you might see that you'll find a different supplier, or maybe the price will drop or whatever, and you maybe then say that's the time to buy it. But I was just shopping at the time. These Merrells have never been that low that I've ever seen. $119 is crazy. So it's just crazy, insane price. $119 for absolute top-notch hiking shoes. Like in Canada, how do you ever get a price like that? I've never seen it. I mean, that's the way any shoe would cost $119 if it's from any, like, I mean, you can buy Nikes or whatever for probably some of them. Maybe you can't buy them for that price. I don't know. But you can buy something, Adidas or some name brand for $119. I'm pretty sure of it. You can get somebody's good brand shoe for $119, but it wouldn't be a top-notch hiking shoe. Mind you, these don't have waterproofing in them. You know, they're not fancy. And they don't have steel toes, right? So there's not, which is another thing that someone might be looking for. I don't like steel toes. There's another reason why I don't like steel toes. Well, they're uncomfortable in the winter. They get colder because the steel gets cold. That's a reason why someone might not like them. And also because they get cold, they get condensation when you get back into a warm place. They get wet, condensation on the steel. So they could, if they're metal, they could rust, or they're going to, you know, get wet inside the shoe because of the condensation. Steel toes are not the best thing for a variety of reasons, but they provide some definite protection in many cases, and sometimes they cause your toes to be severed right off, because a really heavy item falls on the steel toe and it can sever your toes. Steel toes aren't always the best thing, but under some circumstances, they can be fantastic. They can be great. And also, there's one more thing I don't like about steel toes. On the inside, they can be a bit of a knob on the inside, or they can cause the height of the shoe to be higher than it would be. The boot has to be higher to accommodate the steel inside. And when your foot is in there, that steel can sometimes be low enough. It can make a lip there where your toe rubs on that steel toe, on the lip. So it's not... That's another reason it's not good. But I don't have steel. I don't have any steel. I didn't buy steel. I have two pairs of steel toes already, the soles of which have completely disintegrated. So I can't use them right now, but until I get them fixed, if I want to get them fixed. I also have... So I'm not buying any steel toes anymore. I probably never will again. But I do have some Red Wing steel toes boots that I showed on my video the other day that are solid leather uppers. So coming back to the Danners, they're solid leather uppers. Now, my Red Wing boots have no... The sole is gone. But the Danner boots have a Vibram sole on them. Phenomenal sole. One of the best soles in the business for any shoe is a Vibram sole. And the Merrells also have a Vibram sole. They both had Vibram soles. That's why I bought them. I decided... So how did I choose Vibram is a good question. It was almost arbitrary in a sense. I knew they were one of the best. I could have chosen anything, but I decided I would just stick with Vibram because Danner... How I chose Danner is a good question. How I chose Merrell because of brand loyalty, and I knew that these shoes, the Merrells, had a Vibram sole. Somewhere I found out that Vibram soles were invented by a man whose friends were killed in climbing because they didn't have good enough boots because of the sole rubber wasn't good enough for the traction, so they died. So he invented Vibram soles. Vibram soles are one of the best in the world, but that doesn't mean they're the best or anything like that, but maybe they are. You know, it's always going to be a debate, I think. So I just chose Vibram, and it's never really a complete choice. It's always somewhat of a random thing, right? But everything... I thought of this today, okay? I thought of this today. This is the reason why... The reason why people can't have faith in God is because they don't have a reason for everything they do. Everything I did and do has a reason, or I try. I do nothing randomly, right? So there were many reasons why I chose Vibram. In the end, part of it is, a very small bit is random, because I could have shopped longer and tried to find a better sole. You can always shop longer and try to find a better company that makes a better sole or whatever, and then... But there's nobody that's going to be that much better than Vibram. I mean, I know that, right? Because I could just see that. Because of their incredible legacy, right? Or whatever you want to call that. Their high standard and their reputation. And so I could confidently go with Vibram. But the thing is, it's still a bit of a random choice in the sense that I don't know whether... The small bit of randomness is the fact that I don't know if this rubber will dissolve, if the Vibram shoes are going to dissolve. You never know. The old shoes, the two other pairs of boots that I have that are steel toes, the soles of which have dissolved, they weren't Vibram, I know that. So, you know what I mean? So... I mean, you got to at least make a change if you know something doesn't work. Make sure that if something hasn't worked in the past, that you don't go that way. That's another important part of how you choose. Do not choose things that didn't work in the past. Never choose that again. If you lost money on buying Dr. Scholl's, never buy Dr. Scholl's again. That's another way you can do that, right? Or whatever company, it doesn't matter. Any company that lost you money, you can just never buy from them again. You can choose, because nowadays, of course, I mean, especially nowadays, there's more choices than ever of manufacturers. There are Chinese manufacturers, There's ASICS, which is a Japanese company that makes the most fantastic shoes I think I've ever heard of or seen. But there's like about probably 10 other companies that compete with ASICS too. There are at least five big ones or some significant number of companies who make shoes and who compete with ASICS to make shoes, right? You don't have to pick ASICS just because I picked ASICS. It may, in fact, it might not suit your foot, right? It might not work for your foot to buy that company. That's just the way things are. Like everyone, all of us are different. All of us have different preferences too. We might not like the name ASICS, so we don't buy it. Whatever. But this is ASICS is Japanese, and they make phenomenal running shoes. And I own one of their pairs of shoes, and it's a size 9, and I it fits my foot close to perfect, and it weighs next to nothing, and it's a running shoe that's one of the best in the world, and it didn't cost more than $160 before tax and shipping. So I got a good deal on that too. That was a good deal. But you see, I was shopping for weeks or months before I bought that. Like months of, sometimes for several or more, many more hours a day, sometimes shopping, looking for the right shoes, reading the articles on, you know, the review articles written by not just experts, but people who run in the shoes, right? Read reviews by people who use the product if you're going to buy something that costs a significant amount of money, right? Otherwise, if it's a $10 item, well, you know, you can take a risk, but don't buy a million of those things, right, before you know whether they're any good. But you can buy one. If you don't know if it's any good, buy one of them, right? First, buy one of them first if you don't know. If it's got phenomenal ratings, you believe the ratings, maybe you can buy more than one, but I usually don't. Even if something is rated 5 stars by 90% of everybody online, which is never happens, but even if that, or let's say 80% 5 stars, which never happens, 70% 5 stars, let's say, I'm not going to buy more than one of them the first time just to find out if it's any good. If I like it, why not just buy one of them? That doesn't mean you have to pay $10 and then pay for shipping. You can buy other things with it so that you get free shipping. But you buy one of that item. And some items you have to buy more than one or they won't ship it to you. Or they won't even sell it to you, right? But that's rare. That's rare. So I would avoid products that where they force you to buy more than one. It almost never happens, but if that happens, I would avoid those. Like baby powder was one example. Now, I didn't buy that, but now I don't have to buy baby powder because I can make my own, because I now know how to make baby powder using, I can't remember the name of it, kaolin clay and arrowroot powder. That's how you make baby powder. Combining those two things. Now, maybe some babies will be allergic to arrowroot powder. I don't imagine that they'll be allergic to the clay, because kaolin clay is just a rock that was ground up into fine particles and became clay. I'm not sure anybody's allergic to that, but yeah, I guess you can be allergic to anything. This morning, by the way, I was in bed and I had an extreme allergic reaction. I was almost choking. It was getting worse. If I stayed in bed, I was choking. I would almost die. Like, but I'm not reacting now, but it was to the air, a reaction to the air, pollen in the air. And the reason there was pollen in the air was because my bed sheets get pollen on them, right? That's why I have to change my sheets during pollen season, maybe a little more often. But I don't notice it when I'm in bed at night. It's just right now during the daytime. I'm not sure why that is. But that's interesting, because that's another thing to study and learn about. But the thing is, everything that we don't understand is an opportunity to learn something. That's the beauty of that. That's the fantastic thing about it. So it's not a bad thing to not understand something. It's an opportunity to learn something. But you don't want to learn the wrong thing and be wrong. So you need to rely on Jehovah to teach you at the proper time. The other thing I was going to say, the reason why there's pollen right now, it's worse right now, And that's because we haven't had any rain, right? It's great not to have rain. I can do work outside. I want to go out today and do work. I'm going to have time today after this video, hopefully. The reason we can... what was I going to say about the pollen? Yeah, the reason we can work outside is because it's dry. Unfortunately, that means the pollen will be really bad when there's no rain. Rain is what dampens down the pollen. So rain is good every second day or so to get rain if you don't want to have pollen in the air for allergies. Every third day. But to not have rain for 3 days in a row or more than that, it becomes incredibly dangerous even to the point where you could choke to death if you can't get a respirator, you know, that filters out the pollen or something like that. Which reminds me, I need to order the respirator canisters at some point. I broke one of my canisters and then I realized, well, in the past I would have thought I had to buy a new one, but I realized I've got duct tape. I could just duct tape that place that got torn. And it got torn because it was it's plastic that's very old. These canisters I've never used. For years I did not use the canister. It's an organic vapor canister for a respirator, so it filters the dust and the organic vapors. My hand, just by lifting it up by the canister, because it was old plastic, it broke because the plastic is old. And I thought, I have to get a new one. But to buy new canisters, if I had to buy new something every time I broke it, it would be a lot of money all the time, right? I just thought, well, the best way to do that is just put a piece of duct tape on it. Tape it. With any kind of tape. Anything would be better than nothing. Just, you know, you could use Gorilla tape or, you know, Scotch tape probably would work, you know, but something strong like, or electrical tape would have worked too. Duct tape. Just make it hold together better. And then I can use that. There's nothing wrong with the canister. It still hasn't been worn out yet. There's no reason. I mean, I haven't filled it with organic vapor to the point where it's completely used up. I don't have to throw that away yet. So there are a lot of examples where I won't throw things out. Well, my watch. 1973 watch. Did I ever throw it out? I kept it somehow in my drawer. I've always kept it in my drawer, I think, for all my life. It's been in one of my drawers. Whenever I moved from place to place, this came with me and it stayed in one of my drawers. And that's why I still have it nearly 50 years later. And it still runs. It's now 12. What I like about it, 1222. No, sorry, 1229. 12, oh, this one says 1227, not 22. 1228. 1228. 1228 and 1229. Actually, 1230, actually. 12:30 in a few seconds on my digital watch, that one, and which is a Casio, and here it's 12:28. It's like I'm 2 or 3 minutes. It's almost 2 or 3 minutes, but I think it's only 2 minutes slow. But 2 minutes slow after a couple of days is kind of bad. But it's not. I'm not going to mind because I really appreciate this watch. I really do, right? And why wouldn't I? It's 50 years old and I haven't worn it for a while. You know, I mean, it's very heavy. Maybe I'll get tired of it. But one of the advantages of this is at nighttime, right? I don't need to have a light shine on my watch at night to see the dial. This is more visible at night. I could see it. I'm going to wind it a little bit right now, but I don't even think I can get it open with my fingers. It's really tough. Like, I can't pull it with my nails without risking damage to my nails, but I can use a nail file like that, right? Something like that, and just put it under the edge and pry that open just like that. Did it come open? No, I didn't get it open. I need to get the right thickness. It needs to be the right thickness. There, okay. Or I have to yank on it somehow without damaging anything else. But there's nothing. The other buttons are already broken, so there's no damage. So it's 1231. and a bit. So I'll set it at sort of 32. Give me a little bit of leeway. And then click it in. I'm back in business with this watch, right? But reading it at night is phenomenal because it's, I think it used to be luminescent or something. But in the old days, before my time, they used radium. They used radium, maybe even in my days when I was younger, they used radium on the watch dials, and it was radioactive. So the people who worked in the plants, in the factories where they made radium watches, when they didn't know much about radioactivity back in those days, when they didn't know much, people were, you know, severely injured by that, or they were definitely affected by it. I'm not sure actually how many people were injured by radium, but we could Google that. I believe there were some people who were possibly injured, but I don't know if we heard about that, but we heard about some of the side effects anyway of radiation poisoning, right? It's radiation poisoning. It's not good. So radium, but it would last your whole life. A radium dial, you know, it would glow for the whole, the half-life of radium. The half-life, which is the time it takes half of it to disappear into some other element, to become a different element as it decays, because it loses, it, you know, the protons change into something else. The proton becomes a neutron, right, in the atom, and therefore, or there could be alpha decay. Alpha decay, it would lose an alpha particle, which is two protons and two neutrons, isn't it? I think that's what an alpha particle is. Anyway, it loses a significant amount of material and therefore becomes a totally different atom. Different mass by four atomic units. Everything is different. A lot of things, not everything. Essentially everything is different, but it becomes a different atom if it has alpha particle decay. And what's an alpha particle? I used alpha particles in my research, but in a public forum, I'm never going to remember what an alpha particle is. Because in public, nobody knows what it is. So in a public forum, I have to Google it. Yeah, two protons and two neutrons. See, that shows how well I knew it, because I did a master's thesis where I used alpha particles, so I should know what it is. But that's what it really is. But when I'm giving information in a public forum, there's about 9 billion people who are saying he's wrong. You know what I mean? Because they don't know. So in a public forum, you can't talk about something unless you've researched it recently, because you feel like you don't know what you're talking about, even if you do know what you're talking about, if you know what I mean. So it's just difficult in public to give any information given in public. You sound like you could be making it up as you go along. Like, that's what it sounds like in public, and that's how it feels too if you're not currently researching. That's why we read the Bible together, because we don't want to talk about it as though I already know all the stuff. We want to read it together, because we don't want to assume that I know anything. That's important. So we've talked about a lot of things here. The radium dials. So then after that, they used some other type of fluorescent paint that would... No, a radioactive dial will just constantly emit light, right? It's constantly emitting stuff. It's not fluorescing. Fluorescent stuff is what they use later, where it would absorb light and then re-emit. That's what fluorescent stuff does. That's not dangerous stuff, not like radioactive stuff. But the radioactive dials, it wasn't dangerous to own one. It was only dangerous to work in the factory where they painted it, because they would dab the paintbrush on their tongue, and then they'd paint the radium dial, and then they'd dab it on their tongue again. You know, they'd end up with radium in their bodies. I mean, they'd end up with a mutated tongue, with mouth cancer. That's what it was. They get mouth cancer. Yeah. Yep. It was bad. It was a bad situation. But, I mean, that stuff I don't really... You can't rely on that, because I didn't research it right now, right? Maybe I'm wrong. But that I think I remember. It's obvious, right? It seems obvious that I could say that that's true. But because you could swallow these things... If you breathe it into your lungs, you're going to get lung cancer. About a lot of these radioactive particles, I mean, the radioactive atoms, Radioactive elements that emit alpha particles are the worst kind to have in your lungs, too. Anything that emits an alpha particle, if it's in your lungs, you're dead. But swallowing it is okay. It's when you breathe it in that's the problem. And people don't believe that. That I know for a fact. My dad worked in the nuclear business all right out of school, right out of university. And he got top marks in university and he worked in the nuclear business. And he always said you could eat a spoonful of plutonium. You could eat a spoonful of plutonium and it wouldn't kill you. It might affect you, but it wouldn't kill you. But if you breathed any of it, essentially, but if you breathe a spoonful of plutonium, you're going to die. But far less than that would kill you. One particle of plutonium can give you cancer in your lungs, if it's in your lungs. You don't want to get it in your lungs. That's the rule about radioactivity. You must not get it in your lungs, if at all possible. That's the rule. Okay? I think this might be a good place to stop. But I'm fascinated with the question. I love the question. How do you choose? I love that question. And I don't think I can really answer that question because another aspect of it is, you know, how have you made choices in the past affects it? Because whenever you've made choices that were successful in the past, you want to follow that pattern again. You want to do that again, right? You want to improve on it, but you want to do that again. The ones that were good choices in the past, you don't necessarily want to buy the same products, or in many cases you can't buy the same company products because that company's not in business anymore, or they don't make the product that you're interested in or whatever. That's okay to change companies. What I like to do, though, is you can gradually increase the number of loyalties that you have. Gradually add, you can try a new company if you think they're worth it. And if you love them, you can be loyal to them, right? That's the idea of loyalty, is when you really love a company, there's no reason to deviate. Especially since you don't have to do 100,000 hours of research to find out whether the company's any good or not. Right? Any company that you buy from could go out of business tomorrow. Don't forget, right? So a company that's been in existence for 35, 40, 50, 100 years, 200 years, whatever, that's a better risk as well. But and also, but there's so many great new companies who are making really inexpensive is the way to go, though. Inexpensive is the best way to go because you can try something new and see if you like it. I mean, I'm not young anymore. I'm not as interested in trying all the different things as I used to be. I don't need to try all the different things because I have specific needs that I've identified. I know what my needs, what I want, and what I need because I've identified my needs over time. To know what I likely will need in the future is easier. It's more doable for me to know what I might need. But I have a problem just meeting all my potential needs in the future. There's not much time to shop for things that I might like or enjoy, but hopefully there will be some time for that too, right? But there's not a lot of time. So I mean, I'm talking about when I said when you're designing something, personal preference has nothing to do with it. Well, it's the random element. Personal preference comes into when you have to choose between two things and there's no other way to choose. Personal preference is how you should do it in that case. But your personal preference is always based on your past memories, and that's in your subconscious mind. There may be things there that are correct because they're based on fact. And you prefer something maybe based on fact, but you don't know it's based on fact. But so your preference does come into it, personal preference, but it's not how you design something. How you design something is the part you do first before you use your personal preference to make the final decision, right? I mean, obviously, personal preference is also personal preference is gonna help you decide where to shop because you prefer shopping somewhere, right? It's gonna have a lot to do with everything. But we want to eliminate personal preference like maybe we're shopping in the wrong place and we don't know it. So we want to eliminate personal preference when we're designing something, because we might have been doing something for 25 years and doing it the wrong way for 25 years. That's why we want to eliminate personal preference, but we know we can't really eliminate it, if you see what I mean. We can never really eliminate it, and we want to feel good about our purchases when we buy things. We want to feel like, I love this company that I'm buying from, right? But it's, you know, like with Apple, you might not love Apple, but it's difficult to go away from Apple because they provide incredibly good quality, even when they don't do everything the way that, you know, is the most lovable, and that they don't, you know, they're always trying to make money off their customers, apparently, or they seem to be doing things in such a way that they're not giving every advantage to every product, so that you're forced to buy more than one product and so on. It's tough to go away from a company that makes excellent quality products, even though they're not all their products are up to the same level of performance as their more expensive products are at a higher level, so that you're tempted to buy those. But you could still buy the inexpensive one, or they might even produce a new product that costs more and that does less, as we're seeing nowadays that Apple is doing that. But that's partly because everything degenerates over time, like it's devolving. Technology is devolving over time. It doesn't just get created. It devolves, which some people call evolution, but it's devolution really is what it is. Anyway, there's so many things to be aware of, they can't be covered, right? But we can't cover it all. I'm just trying to give you a glimpse into what it's like for me to choose something. And I'll try to remember more things that I can share, because that's a good question. It's an honest question, right? And I didn't realize people have the problem of choosing. It's really the real, if there's only one, if it's a one sentence answer to how do you choose, I think the answer is it's a lot of work. That's the answer. A lot of work. Both in eliminating all the choices you do not want, or the choices, eliminating the things that you don't want or that you are best to stay away from, and narrowing it down then, you know, finding the things that you are vaguely or hopefully very interested in. Try and find something you're interested in, right? That's the other thing. Usually when you're buying boots, let's say, you got to narrow it down. Do you want steel toes? Do you want, you know, what do you want, et cetera, et cetera? Do you want waterproof? Once you've narrowed it down, then you got to figure out, okay, what companies make that product that I'm looking for, right? And then you have to go through that, through all the companies that make that product. There probably are some companies you've never heard of who make that product. So it's a narrowing down. It's a research. It's a... Every purchase is a kind of a one-off, a one-of-a-kind, where or you could do it that way. Now, some things you just say, I need some Scotch tape. What are you going to do? You go out and you buy some Scotch tape. You know, you find the best price. It's not that big of a deal. I don't know. It doesn't always have to be a big process, but if it's only when it's an expensive item, you want to do your research, because you don't want to waste your money. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, right? The more expensive the item, the more research you want to do. There was a guy who tore a pair of Vibergs apart. I just watched the video this morning. He found a piece of foam in the midsole of the boot. And he could not, he was a shoemaker, you know, cobbler. And he was disgusted, because they could have used leather or cork in the midsole of this $1,000 boot. And he couldn't believe they did that. They put foam in there. And now he's got to replace it with something good, because he's rebuilding that sole. But anyway, this is Ward Green. It's October 31st, 2022. It is 12:46 hours. 12:46. I love you. Bye for now.